What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is July 8th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Yu Darvish returned. Yu Backman. Like Hugh Jackman. We even added sideburns on the SP Roundup image. It's beautiful. Thank you so much, Justin Paradis. But how did he look? I loved it. 3.2 innings of 200 runs, 3 hits, 3 walks, 5 Ks is not the line that you really wanted. 63 pitches, but this is why he's a still ill. It's why we don't start pitchers on their first game back. We're going to do it for Tyler Glasnow because he went 80 pitches or so, and it's Tyler Glasnow. Fine. But in general, we don't do it unless we expect him to be like a top 10 pitcher. Okay? So here we go. Darvish, 63 pitches. What he did was leaned a little bit too much on his curveball. It was a sub 50% strike rate on that curveball. I don't like that. But I really love the sweeper and the slider. Both of them went 80% plus strikes on them. Really nice. The fastball was a good velocity at 94. All of this was quintessential Darvish with just a little bit of weird sequencing at times. And we're happy. 12 whiffs over 63 pitches is fantastic. So you should have Darvish on your teams. It might not be great over the weekend against the Phillies. But after that, the second half, yeah, Darvish is going to be a guy you don't drop in your 12-teamer. Zach Gallen, are you going to be holding on to him now? I put him so low on the list last week, 98. And then he had a really good start against the Giants. And now he had another good start. This was against the Padres. 6 innings of 0 earned runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and just 9. Sorry, not just in 9 strikeouts. Oh my gosh. 35% CSW for King Cole. He had 13 whiffs in this time as well. Now, this was the second game of a new catcher. So it's possible that these two starts are really generated by a different battery and they will be their partners moving forward. At the same time, I think Gallen might get dealt at the deadline. So maybe the Diamondbacks are like, hey, we need you to be better. So if you want to go to a World Series caliber team, then you got to do better. But no, in reality, this was a game of really high vert four-seamers down. They were like 18 and 19, which is really nice for Gallen, which then essentially became this massive called strike pitch. He also threw more changeups to right-handers than usual, which were a really good mix-up pitch there. And the curveball was generally down. I mean, that's really what classic Gallen is like. A lot of low four-seamers that set up that death ball curve and changeup. And then he also has some upstairs to just change the eye level here and there. I loved this. I hope that this is something moving forward. I feel like you gotta keep going with it against the Angels. And I feel as though lefties are going to be easier for Gallen because that four-seamer down and away is easier to hit. That is down in arm side versus down in glove side against the Angels. Still, I think it's worthwhile with that changeup being part of the equation now. So you have Jansen Junk against the Reds. 6 innings, 0 runs, 1 hit, 2 walks, and 3 Ks. Oh my gosh! That's a win. And he went dancing with the disco effectively. It was more glove size. It's not like he's just kind of flipping it over as we've seen with other guys, Zach Littell. This was actually him going away with it, which was effective for him. The sweeper didn't get as many strikes as it looked like he should have. He nibbled a bit with it and didn't get those swings. And he has a four-seamer at 16 to 17 inches of vert, but it's kind of dead zone-y given the arm angle that he has. And I kind of feel as if Jansen Junk got away with this a bit. There was a lot of Koufax involved, that is, only one hit in 6 innings here with a lot of hittable pitches. I feel like Jansen Junk is not really anything special, unfortunately, and he is definitely a questionable arm against lefties, so be very careful with Junk. I don't feel like this is the next guy you gotta go for. Freddy Peralta against the Dodgers, gotta win. 6 innings of 0 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. This is what Peralta does. He performs regardless of the opponent. That is, if he throws enough strikes, he will generally be good. And this one's pretty funny. His four-seamer had a 63% strike rate with a 20% NC rate. That is a non-competitive rate. So he threw 85% of his pitches as either amazing, like really good strikes, or obvious balls. And then there's like 10 to 15% that are close to the plate but weren't strikes. Like that is volatility, effectively wild in a nutshell. A little bit of Professor Chaos, but yeah, we just keep rolling with Freddy Peralta. We have Christopher Sanchez against the Giants. 7 innings of 1 run, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. It is so annoying that he goes a hit per inning. Hit per 9 is one of the better stats to look at for whip. We often look at walk rate, and yeah, obviously having a higher walk rate, sure, but hit per 9 gets overlooked. We just kind of treat it as BABIP, but we shouldn't. because sometimes you'll allow more balls in play or so, and maybe those will be more outs or maybe not. But hit per nine essentially says, look, if you are a nine hit per nine, you just can't have an elite whip. You just really can't. That pretty much puts you at baseline of one if you have a 0% walk rate, which you won't. So you got to have like a 3% walk rate to have like a 1.1 whip or lower. So, right? Christopher Sanchez, he just constantly goes nine hit per nine. And it's because of that sinker that gets very hittable over the zone. He just is not one of those pristine command guys. He throws a lot of strikes. It's just unfortunate. But the changeup is just so good. 8Ks, we're going to keep going with it. It's just supposed to be something that is this little ding against Sanchez to prevent him from being an ace. Jose Berríos is the great undulator. However, he got the White Sox. So 6 innings, 1 run, 2 hits, 2 walks in, 4 strikeouts. Yep, that's cool. What isn't cool is Jose Berríos going 90 miles per hour on his sinker. This is a pitch that's supposed to be 92, and it has been pretty much every game. The only one I found that wasn't really was like 91.4 and 90.9, but that was a long time ago. He's been 92 consistently, 90. Don't know why. I don't know. He's a great undulator. Some things are going to change, right? You made the deal with him. You know what you're doing. You're going to get like a 3.7 ERA with a 1.18 whip at the end of the year. I don't know how he's going to get there, but he always does. Even actually last year, he had a 3.38 ERA entering his last game. Of course, he allowed like 6 earned runs to get his ERA above 3.5 because that's the rule. 3.5 to 3.9. Okay. Kiedier Montero got the gold star against the Rays. He got a win. 6 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 1 walk in, 4 strikeouts, just 2 whiffs. Oh. He had 68 pitches to get through 6 innings. That's about 11 pitches per inning. That's incredible. And so that is absolutely bonkers. 88% zone rate on his 4-seamer to lefties and a 71% zone rate on sinkers to righties. I mean, he just kind of threw this over there and the Rays were like, okay, I guess so. Yeah, it's better to be lucky than good is what I say a lot. And this certainly was one of them. Landon Roop against the Phillies. 5 innings, 1 run, 4 hits, 2 walks in, 3 strikeouts. 0 for 31 whiffs on his curveball is shocking to say the least. I love the fact that he's going Blake Snell blueprint with sinkers upstairs and then it's curves and changeups down. To throw all 100% of his pitches to right-handers were competitive. That is 0% non-competitive rate, 0 for 41 is awesome against right-handers. But then the sinker had a 28% NC rate against lefties, which is kind of interesting. I liked what he did with it, but a lot of them were just missing too far up and arm side out of the zone. It happens. But I like what Landon Roop does, and I feel that it's just going to get more and more polished, especially now the changeup has really entered the fray and been a real help for the past month or so. As we've seen development from him, I think he's just getting better here. You have Noah Cameron against the Pirates. Yes, blame it on the Pirates. However, 7 innings, 2 earned runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, 7 Ks, 18 was for Gallus Pohl, as you still need to take advantage of those opportunities that you get. Noah Cameron had been limited under 6 innings for the past like 3 starts or so. It was 4.2 in the last one, but that was situational, remember, right? Because it was bases loaded and he had 2 outs and then decided to pull him. They let him go 190 pitches here. This is a perfect showcase of that Noah Cameron is not inherently given a short leash. It's just situational a little bit more, and I really am upset that they pulled him in that game before. He threw a lot of pitches, yes, but let him get out of the situation. Let him fight through it. This one was pretty easy for him, and I'm really impressed that Noah Cameron has a deep arsenal that he commands well, and he can get right-handers out. This was exclusively against right-handers on the Pirates. Noah Cameron had a really good changeup. He spotted his four-seamer well. His cutter was inside. His curveball was deadly with his cutter as well. Like, it was really, really good. I like this from Noah Cameron. I really do. Richard Fitz is someone we gotta talk about from yesterday's games. We're gonna talk about him and everybody else after this break. Richard Fitz, a little bit of a careful licorice against Rocky Road in Fenway, got the win. 5.2 innings of 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. There was a bonehead play at third base. Still can't believe that. That really extended this, had another run, sure. But what really matters here is that Richard Fitz has an above-average fastball in the fan 4 plus of like above-average extension, height-adjusted VA, vert, but it's 97 and not 95, as we saw previously. He's also coming with an intent to elevate, which is great. He has a legit slider at a 37% CSW and 8 over 35 whiffs, over 70% strikes on that. He has a sinker and a sweeper also against right-handers, and he has a really good curve for lefties. This is a complete pitcher, and I would wager that the Red Sox are going to lean into Fitz. Because let's be honest, Boston. Do you really want to trust Hauk and Hunter Dahmins as much as you are for past the All-Star break? You need Fitz. Fitz is honestly a better pitcher than Brian Bello is right now. That's how it is in my eye. I think if he does well over the weekend against the Rays, they will have no choice but to continue rolling with him past the All-Star break. Now, I do want to alert you that the Red Sox have at Wrigley, at Philly, and then have to host the Dodgers and Fenway as their first three series. If Richard Fitz is the number five, though, he would be able to get at Philly and then get at Minnesota, which is a lot easier to deal with. And let's be honest, Fitz would be the five. So I kind of dig this. I think that Fitz is someone you should be rostering on your teams. Brady Singer against Miami, 5 innings of 200 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk in 3 cases, was in Great American Ballpark. And he has a dusty donut, and I think we collectively put a little bit too much stock into 3.6 ERA, because this is not a good outing. 8 base runners and 3 Ks in 5 innings, it's just not really what you want. He gets Rocky Road over the weekend, fine, we're going to go with that. The slider is actually located well, it's just getting fouled off a lot because it's just not as good as it used to be. And his attack against lefties, Brady Singer, still terrifies me. Shane Baz against the Tigers. It was a very poor quality start. It was 6 innings of 300 runs, 7 hits, 2 walks, exactly 4.5 ERA, 1.5 whip at 6 exact innings. 7 strikeouts and 16 whiffs. And here's the thing with Baz. This was a game where his curveball was just off. It was the worst curveball I've seen from Shane Baz the entire season. But the fastball's still elite, and his cutter is helping. It wasn't very good, but he earned strikes with it where the curveball wouldn't. And it got him through this game. Yes, it was a loss, but he still battled through it. And in a game where Baz did not have his curveball, that he actually survived is a huge deal. The changeup was also actually pretty good against lefties, I gotta say. But just seeing this cutter, and it's not the slider from before, is a huge deal. You should very much believe in Baz at the moment. And I'm not going to let a day without his curveball convince me that he's not good at all. Because we know that's going to be a thing, right? And it's very important to think about this. When bad starts happen, is because of the thing that we were fearful of. Like, you got to ask yourself, okay, this was a scenario where X happened. Is X a likely thing to be bad moving forward or not? And it's the curveball here for Baz. Like, no, that should be an amazing curveball still. Jacob DeGrom against the Angels. 5 innings of 300 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 5 Ks. Very underwhelming. And he actually located fastballs incredibly well at a right-hander. Same with this slider. The slider, though, did not get as many bites as we normally see. And it did get a bite on a 2-0 slider. Oh boy, that was launched over the left field fence. It was the worst slider he threw all day, just location-wise, in a terrible situation. 2-run shot, and that kind of ruined his day. But he should destroy Houston. I mean, this was 98 miles per hour with a really good command against right-handers. Great. Yoshinobu Yamamoto got bamboozled. I watched all of this one. He struggled to find the zone a lot. He got himself in bad counts and got some hits on that. He had 2 walks. And there was a horrible slider. A 2-strike slider to Andrew Vaughn that was just demolished. I mean, it was just a hanger upstairs. He already swung and missed on 2 of them already in that at bat. Oh, man. It was really unfortunate of a game of, like, when things could go wrong, they did. Where Betts even underthrew a ground out that would have ended the inning, and it was an error that extended it past the initial 300 runs, and it just knocked him out of the game. He threw 41 pitches, and they had to take him out. So Yamamoto had many opportunities to escape it. He didn't. It just didn't go his way. Don't worry about it. What are you going to do? Yusei Kikuchi against the Rangers did not have the strikeout explosion. It was 5 innings of 400 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 4 Ks. Very disappointing. And his 4-seamer had a horrible 20% non-competitive rate. It should be 10% or under. His 53% strike rate on that pitch led to more sliders and curveballs down the middle of the plate. And there you go. But what is interesting is that over the last 5 starts, really there's been one amazing one. And then one strikeout game that was great, and he's had this really good run. That one strikeout game was a 1.6 height adjusted VAA. It's kind of how it was. A very flat attacking, very good for his 4-seamer. But since then, it's been actually this 1.2. And also lower extension, 6.7 as opposed to 7. It's weird to me. I'm curious if there's some arm angle change a little bit that happened along the way that helped him, but now is hurting him again. I don't know. Monitor this with Kikuchi. If it's another bad outing, I feel like that was a nice, fun run, and that's it. You have Austin Gomber in Fenway, and it didn't go well. Shocking. More at 11. Tanner Bibee did poorly against the Astros. Now it's really tough. Like, what do we do here? Well, the very least, it's a good schedule moving forward. Okay, it was 4.2 runs, innings of 4 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 3 Ks. Not the worst whip, I guess. And he gets the White Sox next, and then he's going to host the Athletics. And then he's hosting the Orioles in Cleveland. And then he gets Rocky Road. So, okay. You know, like, that's not so bad. Like, maybe Bibee does actually come through there. I believe actually it is in Camden, not hosting the Orioles. But it's going to be tough. I think we just do one start at a time here. We have not seen him put it together. The sinker did terribly. It had to be in the zone a ton, and they hit it. And it's just Bibee's not Bibee. He's not missing bats with breakers. He's not missing bats with changeups nearly as much. It's just chaos, you know? We hate it. Andrew Heaney, speaking of chaos, he is the 15-team hipster, and he's, I guess, a Heen Wolf now, as he went 3 innings of 4 runs against the Royals. Don't go after that. Colton Gorin didn't do well against the Guardians, which was a little disappointing. 5.2 innings of 5 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 2 Ks. He had 4 shutout frames, and then he allowed a 3-run shot to Jose Ramirez on a sweeper. And then it was worse in the 5th, too. It was bad there, and he got pulled. Long story short, though, it was not good command from Colton Gorin. Like, everything was middle height. And generally, we see better height. We see, like, a Blake Snell blueprint from him. So I'm willing to give him a little bit of, hand-waving here. However, yeah, he needs that command every time to be good. More so, I think, than Brandon Walter has a better array of stuff. And I would not chase Gordon, save for a good matchup where you feel like you have a good win chance. And last, but maybe not least, is Sean Burke, who went against the Jays for 5 innings, 6 earned runs, 6 hits, 3 walks, and 2 Ks. I mean, maybe not worse, because I actually see how this works again for Burke. His four-seamer, yes, is down to 94 and not 95, is still there with it was 7.2 feet of extension and 19 inches of vert. That's really good. But the command of the curve was really bad. The slider had a 22% non-competitive rate. Come on! And his changeup was just 0-for-9 CSW. A lot of 2 hits also. Like, the whole package isn't there. He's not polished. But you see how the elements could be there if he has a little bit more command. The stuff is actually pretty good. It's just execution and polish that hopefully we get at some point this year. That is it for today. Enjoy the rest of your afternoons. And of course, go and get Peel Pro. The things that we are working on right now, I cannot express enough, are incredible. And the apps that you get down the stretch, as we do not quit from baseball to go to the other sport. We stick around here. The sit and start grid that you get for 2 weeks from me, the extra day of streamers, the daily and weekly fantasy projections that you get with PLV projections, which are incredible, among so many things. Process Plus Rolling Charts, the number one hitting statistic. Yeah, that's the one I use exclusively. It is by far the best stat to understand hitters and so much more. You can get with PL Pro, so use promo code PODCAST to get 15% off yearly PL Pro. That's promo code PODCAST. So go to pitchers.com/premium today and sign up for Peel Pro yearly for 15% off with promo code PODCAST. That is it for today. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.